What would our lives be if we were only judged by the one worst thing we had done in our lives? What if it didn't matter that the rest of our lives had been devoted to charity? What if it didn't matter if the rest of our lives had been devoted to research and cured cancer? That our entire lives, our entire being, was judged by our worst thing that we had done. This often happens in our world and in our society, particularly those who have been sentenced with murder or other heinous crimes. You know, for funsies, I researched this a little bit. In Texas, they have records of over 100 people who have been judged, tried, convicted, and executed of heinous crimes who were later to be found innocent. But their lives have been judged by this one heinous thing that somebody thought they had done. So here is the difficult point. While it is horrible to paint somebody with a brush based on one act, which is to dismiss the rest of their lives, I will admit that there are, of course, people who have committed heinous crimes. And it's difficult for us to understand. But in our gospel reading today, there are many characters. Martha, Mary, Lazarus, Jesus, all of his disciples, some of the servants. That creates at least a dozen ways that this sermon could go. But today, you may have guessed it, I want to talk about Judas Iscariot. The one who betrayed Jesus. I believe that there are some valuable lessons that he can present for us if we are open in our hearts and our minds to receive them. As with many, if not all topics, there are a multitude of opinions on what Judas was thinking, how long he had been planning, and with what motivations drove him to betray Jesus. There are some who think he might have been good at the start of his ministry with Jesus, and then something turned him bad. Let's explore some of these different thoughts and hear what might ring true for ourselves. There is an old tradition that states that Judas and Jesus were old childhood friends. I'm not sure of the source of this. I did go looking for it. But it probably comes from extra-canonical books. Those are books that wise elders had decided didn't belong in the Bible. So there's this old tradition that Judas and Jesus were childhood friends, and Jesus had to rescue him a couple of times from bad spots. Whether they were childhood friends or not, we do know that Jesus knew Judas because he handpicked him to be among his 12, just like he had handpicked Peter, John, Mark, even Thomas. He handpicked Judas to be with him. During Jesus' ministry, Judas was responsible for the group's money. There are traditions that believed that he was crooked right from the start, stealing from the treasury purse. When Jesus was teaching on various topics, there were times that Jesus would allude to the person who would betray him. And Jesus used very strong language about this person, describing the person as the devil, as a son of perdition, and stating that it would have been better if he had never been born. And yet, Jesus handpicked Judas to travel with him for 3 years to be among the 12. Judas saw all the healings that Jesus did. He saw all the miracles that were performed by or around Jesus. He even went out and preached the gospel with the other disciples when they were dispatched two by two. So what happened? This is a man who followed Jesus through difficult situations, who heard and saw of the love that Jesus had for the Israelites. And yet, he was not able to integrate those truths about Jesus and about God into his own being. And yet, Jesus did not kick him out of his group. He kept Judas with him. He loved Jesus. He loved Judas right until the end. One could say, and many do, that Judas was faultless because, you see, he was possessed by a demon. The gospel writers of Mark and Luke share this belief. The other gospel writers believe that he was bad from the start and he was greedy. If the gospel writers themselves could not agree, how can we know for any certainty what exactly was going on in the mind of Judas? Others say that he was motivated by disappointment. Disappointment that Jesus was not turning out to be the Messiah that was going to kick the Romans out of Israel and rule. Which is important to remember that many people at that time thought the same of same as Judas might have been thinking. They were expecting a conquering hero to be their Messiah. One thing is true for everyone, no matter our actions, our thoughts, or our words. We always have a why for what we did. Mary's why in pouring out that costly ointment was to worship her God. It was an act of devotion. She thought nothing of the worldly cost of that perfume, and only of the fact that she wanted to demonstrate her love and devotion for Jesus. Martha's why, for putting on that potentially elaborate meal for Jesus and all of his disciples, was perhaps gratitude. You see, we're in chapter 12 of John right now. Just back in chapter 11 was where Jesus rose Lazarus from the dead. The disciples, as they reclined, are there perhaps completely oblivious as to what they are witnessing. They do not see the acts of worship and gratitude. They only see the mundane of a meal, perhaps. Isn't that music to our ears? When Judas asked why that perfume was not sold and given to the poor, John editorializes his writing. And that's something that we need to remember. Oftentimes in scriptures, when you see something in brackets, that is largely, possibly, probably more than likely, the opinion of the one who wrote that gospel. Obviously, John and Judas did not get along very well because John labels him a thief. But if you read the same story in Mark or in Matthew, you would read that the other disciples were thinking the same things, yet Judas was the one who gave it word. Perhaps you have had an experience where you have said something hurtful or done something petty. And if you asked why you did that, perhaps you wouldn't be able to say why. Just because we can't identify the why doesn't mean that it is not there. Judas may not have had a why at that moment, but it was there. It would be easy to draw from our reading today the conclusion that Mary is good and Lazarus is bad. But here's the thing. I know that in my life, I have lived as Judas. And at other times in my life, I have lived as Mary. What if they weren't two opposite people? Or what if they weren't two opposite sides of a coin, but if they were two different aspects of our lives, two different ways of living and relating? What if we hold both Mary and Judas within ourselves? When have you been Mary, focused on the divine, acting without thought of the worldly cost? And when have you been Judas, so focused on the worldly cost that you miss the divine? What's your experience of these two? In what ways have they shaped our lives? There is a tension between these two characters, one who worships with abandon and the other who is uncomfortable with that and so focuses on the worldly aspects. I am reminded of the fragrance that must have filled that room. And it reminds me that life can neither be bought nor sold. It is priceless. I don't know if we ever truly live without a why, and I can't answer that, but I know that's the direction that I want to go. I know that's how I want to shape my life. Judas Iscariot had no intention of redeeming humanity when he betrayed Jesus. He may have simply been an opportunist, seizing a chance to make extra money. Or maybe he really believed nothing could stop Jesus, so betraying him and forcing a conflict would only accelerate his plans and his thoughts of the conquering Messiah. Satan certainly didn't want to redeem God's creation. But in Judas, Satan thought he saw an opportunity to ruin God's plan. Neither of them understood that the betrayal of that Judas would do would fulfill prophecies that were made centuries ago, or that it would take the broken world one step closer to God's plan for cosmic redemption. With a kiss, Judas Iscariot would seal his own fate, and he became the most reviled person in all literature. And at the same time, he accidentally triggered the most celebrated event in human history, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Hardly what I would call a bad person. Conflicted? Yes. But bad? I don't think so. The tension between what he intended and what happened is sometimes what keeps us up at night and calls us into question, awakens us to how we truly want to live. That tension is a call to be discerning and to be thoughtful about how we respond to others and engage in life. That tension pushes us to look within ourselves at our motives and our desires. I know that's how I want to live my life, humbly reflective. Where do you find yourself in this story?